WVLK. And now, here's Jack Patty.
It's 8 minutes after 9, 9:08, as we welcome you to this Friday, the 28th day of August. We're brought to you by Landscaper's Corner, celebrating 10 years in business, your one-stop shop for all your landscaping needs. Landscaper's Corner, 1305 Old Frankfort Pike. Call 225-9433. Our question of the day brought to you by United Structural Systems, your foundation repair and waterproofing experts, ifixfoundations.com. 859-254-7700. Ray Larson, I'm not sure you're going to want the question of the day today, because I don't know that you'll answer it very honestly. So do you want to take a chance?
Sure.
Where'd you learn about the birds and the bees?
My dad was in the military.
Yeah.
And my parents never told me.
No,
about
me either. No,
like
me
that.
Either.
But my dad was in the military, and I went to the 9th, 10th, and 11th and grades in Paris, France.
Yeah.
And I learned the birds and the bees in the dorm.
In the dorm. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, that's our question. You tell us at WVLKAM.com. You were honest about it. Yeah. Tune in for the results with Cruiser and Crew, noon to 3. Now, yesterday, I know you're going to have an opinion about this. We asked, what do you think would have prevented day before yesterday's shootings in Virginia? 10% said stricter gun laws, 5% said better mental health care, and a whopping 85% said nothing would have prevented it. It's a chance that we take every day, I guess, just living in a world with crazy people in it.
Well, you know, all three of those things have significant issues involved. The business about mental illness, mm-hmm. In our wisdom, decided that we're not going to keep people in mental institutions. They're now on the street, and you can see them every day.
Right.
And the business about stricter gun laws. Well, I said earlier today that you do that, the only people who are going to have the guns are going to end up being the criminals, because they'll get the guns.
Right.
And I agree with nothing.
With 85%.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Before we get to our topic, which is a great one, and our guest is a good one too, I want to congratulate Rob Sanders, who was with us last week on the program, for becoming the new president of the Prosecutors Association.
Yeah. Well, Rob is a first class guy.
He really is,
and a superior prosecutor. And Michelle Snodgrass, who is the Commonwealth Attorney in Campbell County in Newport, is right up there next door to him, and she
probably doesn't like him.
But, well, that's right. Yeah. Well, none of us like him.
There you go.
But it's amazing how much help people are to each other.
I bet. And especially up there, there's so many towns that are just right side by side.
Michelle, how you doing?
I'm doing good, Rain Jack. How are you guys?
Good morning.
And I do like Rob.
Good.
In fact, Rob and I were in law school together.
You so were.
We work well together.
Well, good. He's a very impressive guy.
And there are some of our best prosecutors are in Northern Kentucky. Linda Talley Smith is in Boone and Gallatin County. I call it Galatian County. And Rob Sanders has got Kenton County, and Michelle has got Campbell County. So we got some home run hitters in that group.
And we work real well together, and that's what's important.
Yeah. Michelle, this case that you've got, this Shayna Huber's case, was really a kind of a super high-profile case up there.
You know, it was really amazing to me, the media interest. You never know what case is going to attract the national media, but we had news outlets from everywhere. In fact, I got a call from Fuji TV in Japan wanting to interview me about this case. It definitely
appealed
to everyone.
What, in Japan? No kidding.
Well, now tell me, what is it about this case that caused so much attention?
Well, I think what really drew people's interest was the individuals involved. The victim in this case, Ryan Poston, was a young, promising attorney the defendant, the murderer in this case, was a 21-year-old college graduate from your neck of the woods, from Lexington. They were beautiful people.
I was going to say they were both really good looking, and if they'd been ugly people, it probably wouldn't have been nearly as interesting.
Well, not just good looking, but talented, with wonderful futures ahead of them. And what happened on that night on October 12th of 2012 totally changed that for them and everyone in their families.
Let me just ask a question here, because it really bothers me. And I want to ask Jack, because Jack is a media mogul.
I'm a legend in my own mind.
Right.
Don't forget.
But so this guy, this handsome guy, is killed by this very attractive young woman.
Yes.
Why doesn't the media pay as much attention to so many young black men being killed by other young black men? Why don't we get the same attention? What do you think, Jack? You're a media guy.
It just doesn't sell. It just doesn't sell.
And you know, Ray, before I went to law school, my background was in journalism, and it was in reporting. And Jack's absolutely right. It's what is going to draw people's attention. You know, the pretty people, the young people, the successful people. It's so much more of a tragedy that people have really paid attention to. Amazing to me, even here, normally Northern Kentucky kind of gets overlooked or overshadowed by Cincinnati, which is right across the river. I had more people in Cincinnati stop me and talk to me about this case. I was shopping at a mall over the weekend after the sentencing, and I heard two women talking about it.
They didn't know who you were?
I don't think they knew who I was, or when I heard them, I turned the other direction, but they were talking about it.
Well, in Lexington, we have Tanya Lindsay, who lost a son, and Anita Franklin, who lost a son, are trying desperately to get attention to the subject that I just mentioned, that these young African-American men are being killed by other young African-American men.
And it doesn't make the headlines.
They're going to keep on it, and we're going to keep on it, because it's significant.
Right.
It absolutely is. And about 1 month after I tried the Shayna Huber's murder case, I tried another murder case from up here in Northern Kentucky, where one brother shot his brother. They were in their 50s. Children, grandchildren are now left without, you know, their fathers, and no one paid attention to that. So even for me up here in Northern Kentucky in Campbell County, I don't know what the difference was. I certainly worked as hard for that victim as I did for Ryan Poston. It's just the media doesn't latch on to it.
Let's talk a little bit about how were you notified that you had a homicide involving this Shayna Huber's and this Ryan Poston?
Well, I was actually coming back from a little ziplining trip with my family. My son was on fall break, and I was about 45 minutes outside of Cincinnati, and I got the call from the coroner's office and the police. So I was dropped off at the crime scene
during the
way back from the trip.
It happened during the daytime then, huh?
No, it happened at about 8 o'clock at night.
Oh.
I went right there to the scene, and you know, for some of us prosecutors, we like to see things. You can't tell the same thing in a photograph that you can see from actually being there. It's always important for me to go to murder scenes.
What'd you find?
I found a scene that looked absolutely nothing like what was described by the defendant. And the most disturbing thing that I saw was Ryan Poston's body stuck behind the kitchen table in almost what looked like a seating position, as if he had been blown out of his chair by the blast of the gun. And why it was so disturbing is that the initial report that came into 911 was that this was self-defense on the part of Shayna Huber's. Unfortunately, immediately for the police and for myself, it didn't look like a scene that had occurred out of self-defense.
Okay, so did you know this young man?
I didn't. He had a law office in downtown Cincinnati. He had been practicing for a short period of time, but most of his cases came out of Ohio. So I knew his uncle. I had had a case with him who practices in Northern Kentucky, but I had never met Ryan Poston.
So you're at the scene and you get a good look at what the real picture is. And so tell me about what happens from there.
Well, at this point in time, Shayna Hubers is back at the Highland Heights Police Department. And she said to the police at the time they gave her Miranda warnings that she did not want to give a statement, did not want to be questioned. So at that point in time, the police officer stops. What's really interesting for anybody who paid attention to this case or that saw anything that happened in trial is that immediately after she invoked her right to remain silent, she opened her mouth again and pretty much for 2.5 hours did not shut it. She talked and talked and talked. Now, she was not being questioned by the police, so it's her right at any point in time to just speak.
Okay,
all of that was recorded.
Now, Jack does a sort of a law school a prep course here.
Because this sounds like a sticky wicket to me, is it?
No, it's not, because anyone has the ability, once you invoke your Miranda rights to remain silent, you can still talk. What that means when you invoke your Miranda rights is that officers cannot question you.
But you can talk, and that's admissible.
Absolutely it is, and my officers did not ask her one question. They literally sat there in silence and said nothing.
In the Michael Turpin case, Ray, we were talking about that earlier. There was some testimony that they didn't allow in because she had asked for an attorney.
Karen Brown asked the police officer if she needed a lawyer, and the police officer said, "Well, that's a decision you have to make." Now, judges are very cautious and typically always land on the side of what I consider the bad guy.
I see. All right, we're going to take a break. Interesting.
All right, we are back. It's 26 minutes after 9 o'clock, 9:26. News Talk 590 WVLK. This is really a fascinating case. Of course, Ray is with us in the studio. We've got Michelle Snodgrass on the phone. She's a prosecutor in this murder where 21-year-old girl, former Lexingtonian, former student, honor student, actually, Michelle, isn't that right, at Paul Lawrence Dunbar?
Yes, she was, and she also was a graduate of the University of Kentucky.
Okay.
So at 21 years of age, she had received her degree, so clearly she is a smart young woman.
And she killed her boyfriend, and he was an attorney. Do you know where they met?
Well, what we were told was that they met through Ryan's cousin, who was Shayna Huber's friend. Her name was Carissa Carlisle. She was also a student at the University of Kentucky. And she sort of suggested that the two of them meet. So through Facebook, Ryan and Shayna got to know each other, and eventually they met up and started dating.
Well, now, walk us through that relationship that as you learned it during the investigation.
Well, what is so unique probably about this case as opposed to some other cases I've handled over the years is that I can walk you through the relationship. And the reason is that these two individuals lived their lives through social media. So through text messages, through Facebook messages, we are able to kind of piece together everything that happened in their relationship. So it started in 2011. But this relationship, according to everyone who knew them, was on again, off again, at best. They would see each other for a while, then they would break up. Somebody would get mad at the other person, and then they wouldn't see each other anymore. So from 2011 until early 2012, they were on again, off again.
Let me take a call real quick while we're on the subject here. Robert, good morning.
Good morning. And I followed this case closely. I was fascinated by it and read everything that I could get on it, watched everything I got on it.
Mm-hmm.
She's just referring, Ms. Snodgrass is just referring to the on-again, off-again relationship between the two. And I've always got the impression, and I'd like to address the black vest too before I hang up, but I always got the impression in this deal that Ryan always kind of wanted to break up with her. He was kind of tired of her. But at the same time, he always kept her on the string as kind of a side piece in case whatever he was working on at the time didn't quite fall through. That he was his fallback. I always said it's kind of like you buy a new car, but you keep your old car in the driveway in case you want to bring your new car for something you got to do in bad weather. So she was there on his, but he kept her on the string. I'm not excusing what she did. She shouldn't have done anything. She should have walked away. But the fact of the matter is that he was, in effect, sort of using her as a de facto sex partner whenever he couldn't round up something else. And the second part about the black against black crime and why this doesn't get any attention, and no matter whether you watch 48 Hours or Dateline or any of those shows when it comes to crimes, it doesn't involve that I've ever seen. Maybe it does occasionally. But the fact of the matter is that we have, in effect, as a society, and maybe they have too, relegated young black men to second-class citizenship, so we really don't worry about that. And especially when it comes to their relationship with police, and Ms. Snodgrass used the term "my officers," which points out what I've always said is there's a very incestuous relationship between police and prosecutors, which is the reason many times when police do wrong, they're not necessarily held accountable as the general public is. And I'll hang up and take your
all right.
Off
I appreciate that, and I've got to take a break, get an update from the information center. So you keep that answer, Michelle, and we'll talk about it with you and Ray when we come back. 253-5959, touch star 590 from AT&T, toll free from anywhere, 1-877-777-0590. Email jackpatty at wvlkam.com. We'll be right back. This is going too fast, Ray. Ray Larson, of course, is in the studio with us, and Michelle Snodgrass, prosecutor from Northern Kentucky, is on the phone with us. And going into the break, a guy said that you guys have incestuous relationships with the cops.
Well, first of all, that sounds kinky.
It does, a little bit. What do you say, Michelle?
Well, I think in communities like Campbell County, where you work with your officers so much, you say, my officers, because you're a team. You work together. I certainly would never cover up anything. And in fact, we have dealt with issues with cops when they've done things inappropriately. Highland Heights police officers, I've known them for so long. I went to high school with some of them. That's just how our community is. And I think they would refer to me as my prosecutor.
Yeah.
Just because the types of cases you work on, you get close with them.
You have any comment, Ray?
Sure. Specifically, as it relates to Robert, he made that comment that he's thought that there's an incestuous relationship between police and prosecutors. And I've dealt with this a lot lately because that's basically the national media narrative, is that cops are all bad, all racist,
right,
and prosecutors are part of the same bunch.
Yeah.
And Robert has bought into that, and I'm sorry to hear that, but it's absolutely inaccurate, as Michelle says. So
Michelle, was this girl, as the guy indicated, Shayna, was she just, I think he said, I don't know if I want to repeat what he said, but it was a side deal. You get that impression that he?
Well, I think as far as Robert's perception of the case goes, I do think he picked up on some things. Looking back over their relationship and their messages, it was kind of uncomfortable for me because as a woman, I would have read all those signs and said, this guy doesn't want me around. Shayna didn't pick up on those, and she would drive from Lexington day after day after day to see if Ryan wanted food or to clean his apartment or whatever she could do, and then sometimes went home because he didn't want to see her. So I think for a lot of people, those signals would have been clear. They just were not clear to her. And from everything that I've learned about Ryan Poston is that he had a really hard time breaking things off. He didn't want to do that.
Let me ask you a question here, Michelle.
Yeah.
We're not going to get through even the investigation of this case. Are you Can you come back next Friday and do the trial?
Sure, absolutely. We'll make it part two.
Okay.
That's great. Thank you, because this is too interesting to cut short.
Okay, so what did you learn about during the investigation that really caused you to ultimately end up charging this woman with a homicide?
Well, what was most important to us was what Shayna Huber said. As I told you a little bit earlier in the show, she talked and talked for a long time. She went through a couple of different versions of what had occurred that night, but she gave investigators some very important facts that they could check back at the condo. She had told them that she was thrown around the room and that Ryan had attacked her. So when the investigators went to the crime scene, what they saw, they wanted to see if it matched up, and it didn't. It was a kind of small condominium in Highland Heights, Kentucky, and it looked like a bachelor pad, quite frankly. There were fast food bags around, some laundry around. But Ryan Poston had shelving units that had a bunch of knickknacks on them, pipes standing and being held up in stands. He was an avid gun collector, so he had some ammunition from historic guns that were set up on these shelving units that supposedly she was thrown into by him. It was very interesting that nothing was knocked over or out of place in this crime scene. It was crowded. It was tight. If there had been a fight and a struggle, we would have seen different evidence.
What sort of comments did she make about what she did?
Well, the first call to 911, she told the 911 operator that Ryan Poston had the gun in his hand, and she reached up, grabbed it out of his hand, and turned it on him and fired. So that's what she told 911. However, an hour later, when she was with the police, as she was giving her statement voluntarily, what she said is that she picked the gun up off of the table as Ryan was sitting at the table. So that was contradictory in itself. You remember whether or not you take it out of the attacker's hands or whether you pick it up off the table. The physical evidence showed us that Ryan Poston was seated with his back towards the wall and the table in front of him. So the table was a barrier between Shayna Hubers and Ryan Poston.
Okay, so what did she give any indication about, any other indication about why she shot him?
Well, she said that Ryan was saying some really mean things to her, criticizing her, making fun of her accent, saying things about her family. So at times during her statement, she would blame her actions on what Ryan said to her. Other times in the statement, she blamed it on the fact that he reached across the table and she thought that he was going to hit her because previously he had thrown her around the room.
What now, the story that our research, because what we do, Jack, is when we get the case and we get Michelle's permission to come on the show, then what we do is really research the case. And we had to wait and wait and wait because we wanted Michelle wouldn't talk about it, nor would I, until this defendant was sentenced.
Sure.
But he had arranged a date with another woman. And was that any part of the issue?
Well, we think it was. I know that Shayna Hubers denies that. She denies that she even knew that Ryan was seeing Miss Ohio on the night that he was murdered. But what we found during our investigation of our forensic evidence is that Shayna Hubers would access Ryan Poston's Facebook page, and she would look at the messages that he was sending to other people. Well, the way that Ryan and Miss Ohio had arranged their date was through Facebook. So we do believe that either she knew about it earlier that day on October 12th, or when she showed up at Ryan's condominium, he told her that he was going out with someone else and that this person was Miss Ohio and he was meeting her. He was actually getting ready to leave to go to the bar to meet her for their date. So we do believe that Shayna Hubers knew that Ryan Poston was seeing someone else, because earlier that day, he told her to stay away. Stay away. I do not want to see you. So why else would she have shown up at his apartment that night?
253-5959, touch star 590 from AT&T, toll free from anywhere, 1-877-777-0590, or email jackpatty at wvlkam.com. 945. Yeah, I'm so glad that this is going to be a two-part show, because we've got so much. We haven't gotten to the trial yet, so we'll do the trial next week, right, Ray?
Right.
Here's kind of an interesting question from one of our listeners. It's from Ziggy. He says, you mentioned the Virginia case where the killer videotaped the murders. The prosecutor said she goes in person to her crime scenes. And we're talking about our guest, Michelle Snodgrass, who's on the phone with us. The videotape of the news reporter being shot does not show any blood spurting. My question is, does blood spurting out onto clothing when someone is shot, like in the movies? I know from Dateline that knife attacks really are very bloody with spatter profiles, but what about gunshots? Does it depend on the angle, or what do you say, Michelle?
Well, gunshot wounds really aren't as bloody as they appear in movies and television. What happened in this particular case that resulted in the most blood was the two shots to Ryan Poston's head, his forehead just above the eyebrow, and one on the other side on his head, almost at the hairline. Head wounds bleed a lot, and the majority of our blood at this crime scene was on the kitchen table. When Ryan Poston was shot, our forensic evidence tells us that his head hit the table, and it was there for a little bit of time while it bled. So most of the blood was on the table after Ryan's body fell to the floor. So no, they're not as bloody as you see on TV.
And I guess you could also tell, because of the way the shots were placed, that it wasn't a defensive thing on her part like she claimed.
Well, the trajectory of the bullet wounds told us a whole lot, and it became very important at the trial, which we can talk about more next week. But this is all science. Some of us wish we would have paid a little bit more attention in school when we were taking these classes, but the entry wounds to Ryan Poston were at an angle that was downward. So what does that tell you? That tells you that he was seated, or he was below Shayna Hubers. So if she is claiming that this is self-defense, you would expect to see something differently as far as the angles are concerned.
Very important, because what happens is that not only do they get the line of travel of the bullet.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very sophisticated. Our ballistics and firearms experts and our medical examiners are very sophisticated in helping make those determinations, the angle that Michelle is talking about.
Before we leave, can we get some quotes that this girl made to the police? Because I think our listeners would be interested in
They'd
that.
I'm appalled.
Can you share some of that with us, Michelle?
Well, I was at the police station when she was giving this statement of hers, and she said a couple of things that literally left me speechless. And I'm sure, as Ray can tell you, we've seen and heard it all. So when something leaves you speechless, you know that it's even worse than you probably first imagined. What she said to the police officers is that Ryan Poston was very vain, and he wanted a nose job. That was one of the last conversations that they had had. And she gestures towards her face and says, I shot him here. I gave him the nose job he always wanted.
Gee. Yeah, that's...
What about this business about that that we saw that... Why did she shoot him additional times?
Well, it was all I kept thinking was that she kind of treated him like roadkill. You know, she said that he was twitching and making noises after she shot him two times. And she couldn't stand to see him twitching and making noises. It was hurting her. So she shot him a few more times to put him out of his misery.
Sounds like it does. It's exactly what it sounds like. It sounds like roadkill.
All right.
Well,
now,
and you got to think about this from the parents' perspective, from Ryan Poston's parents' perspective, to hear that. You know, I know Ray is such a advocate for victims of crime and these families who have had a loved one taken tragically from them. It's hard enough, but when you hear these types of statements, that is what causes them to die a little bit each time they hear it.
Thank you so much, Michelle. This is part one. Part two next week, Ray.
Thanks, Michelle. We'll see you next week.
And stand by. We have an update from the information center.